You're listening to the New City Church podcast. These episodes are recorded live on Gadigal land. Sometimes the audio quality might not be perfect because what you're listening to is a conversation. We don't edit out the chatter, and we think that's what makes it authentic. Wherever you're tuning in from, we hope you find this episode encouraging.
Welcome if you're new or newish to New City. My name's Joel, pronouns he, him. I have the joy of being part of this community and the joy of jumping into Ezekiel with you today. Ezekiel has quite a profound place in my heart because it has my favorite spot in the Hebrew Bibles, the Old Testament, and it has my least favorite spot. So both, all in one. It's vicious. You know, the book of Ezekiel, there's parts of it. There's a long Jewish tradition where parts of it, chapter 16 and 23, are banned from being read out loud. So in synagogue, no one reads these out loud because they're grotesque. Like, they're disgusting. I don't think I've ever heard in church anyone speak about Ezekiel 16 and 23 for good reason, but we're going to do it. We're going to do it. But I'll give you fair warning. I might send an email out of the days before to say these chapters contain a lot of violent imagery aimed at women, and God is the perpetrator. Ooh, that's uncomfortable, isn't it? So Ezekiel has really ugly stuff in it, and it would be really nice if we were just like, okay, let's skip over that and discuss something else. Let's do the nice parts of Ezekiel. I don't want to do that. I want us to be a church that can get into the nitty-gritty and be like, what on earth is going on here? If I was to read Ezekiel 16 and 23 on their own, I wouldn't follow God. If I'm honest, like, it's pretty gross. That's my honest opinion. So anyway, that's a forewarning of where we're heading. Tonight, we're not doing the ugly stuff. We're doing the lovely stuff. Yay! We're doing some really nice stuff. My take home that I have been thinking about as I've been reading Ezekiel 1 and 2 this week is sometimes life doesn't go as planned. Okay, we agree on that. Like, there was a general like, oh yeah, life doesn't go as planned. And neither does God. That's my take home that I have been thinking about. Life doesn't go as it's supposed to go, and God doesn't go as God is supposed to go. That's the take home that I keep coming back to from Ezekiel 1. We're going to jump into Ezekiel from chapter 1, and I'm going to read some of it now. Some of it is going to feel really familiar for you if you have been here from the last series in Revelation, because the angel who appeared to John in Revelation had run out of material in the writer's room and was largely just copy and pasting from Ezekiel. We'll discover that, and not citing his work either. So some of it might feel really familiar. Does anyone remember the style of literature that we're in Revelation? Anyone remember what it's called? Apocalyptic literature. It's weird, it's a bit bizarre. The saying, wheels within wheels, comes from the passage that we're about to read. But let's just jump into it. Ezekiel chapter 1 and 2. I'm going to read it for us. Feel free to follow along on your phones or sit and absorb it. Feel free to grab a cup of tea, wander around, make yourself at home. I'm reading from the NIV. Ezekiel chapter 1. In my 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the Kibar River, the heavens were opened and I saw visions of God. On the fifth month, it was the fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiachin, the word of Yahweh came to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, by the Kibar River in the land of the Babylonians. There the hand of Yahweh was on him. Pop quiz, see if you've been listening. Where is Ezekiel at this point? He's in Babylon, and what's he sitting by? A river. Well done. And how old is he? 30. And 5 months. Well done. You're good. This is important. This is important. I looked. This is from verse 4. And I saw a windstorm coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing and lightning surrounded by brilliant light. Geography, Babylon is south of Israel. So he's seeing a cloud come out of Israel. An immense cloud with flashing lightning sounded by brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal. And in the fire was what looked like four living, are we seeing Revelation here? Four living creatures. In appearance, their form was human, but each of them had four faces and four wings. Their legs were straight. I don't know if that doesn't mean that, if that means they didn't have knees. I don't know what that means, but their legs are straight. Their feet were like those of a calf, and they gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings, are we following so far? Under their wings, on their four sides, they had human hands. All four of them had faces and wings, and the wings of each one touched the wings of another. Each one went straight ahead. They did not turn as they moved. Their faces looked like this. See if you can picture it. Each one of the four had a face of a human being on the right side. Each of the four had a face of a human being. And on the right side, each had the face of a lion. And on the left, the face of an ox. Each also had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. They each had two wings spreading out upwards, each wing touching the creature on the other side. I'm going to skip down a little bit because it just gets weird and we don't actually know what it's talking about. But you can read it in your own time. But it's fascinating imagery, and we've covered some of that in the Revelation series recently. So hopefully you can go back and listen to that, or it should be a little bit familiar to you. Verse 15, as I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the ground beside each creature with its four faces. This was the appearance and the structure of the wheels. And Ezekiel then goes on to explain what the wheels looked like. From verse 19, when the living creatures moved, the wheels beside them moved, and the living creatures rose from the ground, the wheels also rose. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go, and the wheels would rise along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. This is a living, breathing, spirit-filled apparatus that's moving around via wheels and wings. Is it weird enough yet? You're like, why is this in the Bible? Like, what is actually being described here? Spread out above that, more detail, as though we need it. Spread out above the heads of the living creatures was what looked like a vault. It's very unclear here. Sparkling like crystal and awesome. Under the vault, their wings were stretched out one toward the other, and each had two wings covering its body. Okay, I'm going to skip down and get like the detail here is immense, and it's picturing something really, really vast, spectacular. We're supposed to be in awe of it. Down in verse 27. I'll go from 26. Above the vault, so the vault was above them. Above the vault, over their heads, was what looked like a throne. So this is what we're starting to picture now. What we're picturing is the throne of God, and it's sitting above these creatures. A throne of lapis lazuli, a precious stone. And high above the throne was a figure like that of a man. I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up. Do you see Ezekiel is very unsure about all this? He's not quite certain about anything. I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up, he was glowing like metal, as if of fire. And that from there down, He looked like fire, and brilliant light surrounded him, like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day. So was the radiance about him. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Yahweh. So he didn't see Yahweh. Let's be clear. He didn't see Yahweh. He didn't see God. He saw the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Yahweh. He kind of, sort of, maybe, potentially caught a glimpse of something that looked like it could have been, perhaps, a bit of like the glory of God. Does that make sense? So in God, in all God's glory, is present for Ezekiel, and even then, Ezekiel is trying to capture it, and he can't. When I saw it, I, Ezekiel, fell face down, and I heard the voice of one speaking. The one speaking said to me, "Son of man, stand up on your feet, and I will speak to you." As he spoke, the Spirit came into me, raised me to my feet, and I heard him speaking to me. He said, "Son of man," it gets repetitive, doesn't it? "Son of man, I am sending you to the Israelites, to a rebellious nation that has rebelled against me. They and their ancestors have been in revolt against me to this very day." And don't you want to know what God says at that point? That's next week. We're not going to go there tonight. But God starts speaking, and God sends Ezekiel out to Israel. So that's the chapter we're in tonight. Where did we find Ezekiel? By a river in Babylon. How old was Ezekiel? 30. Ezekiel, at this point in his life, is not supposed to be in Babylon. Ezekiel is not supposed to be by a river in Babylon. Ezekiel has just turned 30. And this is why it's important. Ezekiel has turned 30, and he is a priest. At 30, the priests should be installed in the temple. The temple is not in Babylon. The temple is in Israel. Specifically, he is supposed to be in Jerusalem. Now, I want to always remind us that we're speaking about a very different way of thinking about Jerusalem and Israel to modern settings. But at the time when it was written, we're thinking 590 BC, that's our snapshot in time. Here's what's happened. Israel is on the brink of collapse. The Babylonian army has come in, and they have taken, not all of them, they've taken the cream of the crop, all the scholars, the priests, the scribes, the teachers of the law. The Babylonian army has taken them all and placed them in Babylon, modern-day Iraq. This is where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that story, comes in. The book of Daniel, that's where this, it's all set in Babylon. And they're now in exile. That's the situation that Ezekiel finds himself in on his 30th birthday. He should have been being prepared to be installed in the temple as a priest, but instead, his life has gone terribly askew. At this point, I feel really sorry for Ezekiel. Let's call him Ez. I feel sorry for Ez. There's an element of me, not in every way, but there's an element of me that resonates with his story. And I actually think that for many of you, it probably resonates as well if we're to flesh it out. Here's what it looked like for me. Growing up, I experienced a real closeness with God. For those of you who grew up in Christian spaces or religious spaces, you might have experienced that as well. I resonated with God, and I knew that I wanted to go into ministry. I knew that I wanted to be a pastor. I knew that I wanted to maybe go overseas off to, I had planned and I got accepted to go to India as a missionary. I felt like that was my calling. It had been spoken into my life that I was going to do that. People had said this, and that they'd fed into me in that way. And then adulting happened. That thing, it took place. I want to throw it out to you for some words. Either put yourself in Ez's shoes, or think about your own experiences when life didn't go to plan, when life went awry, when it just got entirely derailed. I want to throw out, what does it feel like? What would Ez be feeling at this point? While you think of those words, I'll tell you a story. Have I told you the story of my first kiss? Thanks for laughing. Who laughed? Someone laughed. I've kissed a girl. Can't say I really liked it. I was in year 12. I had been dating her for a couple of months. My English teacher had put bets that we would be the first couple to be married. There's pressure. You got to remember, this is small town Blue Mountains independent Christian school. Any couple is supposed to get married within the first 6 months of graduating. That's the path that you follow. We had just finished the school open day. It was nighttime, and my parents had walked off, and her and I were walking up. I knew that I was supposed to be having feelings. By the way, I'm gay. That is an important part of this story. I'm supposed to be having feelings, and I know that I'm supposed to hold her hand. So I reach out and hold it. It's cold. It's clammy. It's so unpleasant. Walking up, we get to the top of the driveway. It's a long driveway, all in the dark. I'm like, I know that I'm supposed to be being naughty here, but there's just nothing in me that wants to. She's like, okay, goodbye, Joel, and leans forward. I'm like, okay, goodbye. I lean forward. I give her the quickest peck that I can possibly get away with and just run. I just get out of there. We'd broken up within 2 weeks. It was such a confirmation for me that no, girls' lips are gross. It didn't do anything. I look back, here's why I tell that story. I look back, that was such a clear defining moment when my life just started going off the rails. Because I realized, oh yeah, I'm not marrying you. That would be a hell of a shit show. That would just be a disaster for you, for me, for everyone involved. And then I watched, our lives went different ways. We were still good friends, but our lives just naturally drifted away. And I watched afar on social media as she got married, as she then had kids, as she and her husband went into ministry. And I was busting my gut out working for the Lord. I was doing a master's in theology. I was working in churches, but I was so miserable and so low and so angry. And as much as I told people that I loved God and I believed in the gospel, I hated the path that my life was taking. I was so bitter. So that's why I feel like in some way I resonate with Ez. Ez had been raised knowing that he was to be a mighty man of God in the temple of Jerusalem, at the heartbeat of the religious institution of Israel. That was Ez's calling, that was Ez's journey. And then 5 years before he is installed, the Babylonians arrive and take him away from his family, take him away from his people, take him away from everything that mattered to him, and his life went off the rails entirely. When life doesn't go to plan, either to the magnitude of Ez or to the magnitude of a young gay guy who discovers he can't be in the ministry that he always hoped to be in, or in any way that we can possibly imagine, all these emotions come up. So I asked you to think of words. What are some of the words that you can imagine Ez is feeling, or for yourself, if you've been in a situation where life just, it hit the fan, what comes up? Throw some words out. Despair. Resentment. That's it? Just the two? Oh, L. Yeah, disappointing. Yeah. Anger. Grief. Yeah. If anyone's online, Nick can take the comments as well and throw them out. Confusion. Aimlessness. Heck yeah. Foolish. That's a good word. Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. There's a sense of embarrassment. Like, oh, I can't believe I believed that. Yeah. Others? Disoriented? Nick? Absent-minded. And despondent. Yeah. Let's get three more. This is a good, like, psychoeducational expansion. Let down. Yeah. Yes. Any others? Oh, sorry. Hopelessness. Bewilderment. Okay, we made it. Well done. That's a lot of words. Has anyone felt any of those before? I want a show of hands. That's tonight's altar call. We felt that. Like we resonate with Ez at this point. He's sitting on the banks of the Khabar River in modern-day Iraq, ripped from everything that mattered to him. And I can imagine at this point, he is deeply pissed off with the Babylonians, deeply pissed off with the Israelites, because as we get through, we'll see kind of one of the reasons they ended up in exile was because of the Israelites' behavior. So he's probably pissed off with the Israelites. I imagine he's deeply pissed off with God as well. So angry. And then, as he is sitting on the edge of the river, I don't know how he's feeling, but that's how I picture it, those words that we just said. He sees a vision. The heavens open up. And he gets this image of, what did we say? It wasn't the glory of God. He saw the likeness of the appearance of the glory of God. Something like God. And at this point, the question isn't how did God show up in Babylon? We know exactly how God showed up in Babylon. He's on a throne that has wings and wheels. Obviously, it's kind of a chitty chitty bang bang situation. God has appeared in Babylon. But the question isn't how he got there. The question is why. Why is God in Babylon? You see, Ezekiel is supposed to be in Israel. Ezekiel is supposed to be in Jerusalem. Ezekiel is supposed to be in the temple. Ezekiel is supposed to be prepared to go into the Holy of Holies. Lo and behold, by the banks of the Khabar River in Babylon, we discover God is supposed to be in Israel. God is supposed to be in Jerusalem. Specifically, God is supposed to be in the temple. That's where God dwells. That's what the entire Old Testament has said up to this point. Specifically, God is supposed to be in the Holy of Holies. And to really nerd it out, if we picture that the wings and the cherubim that are over the throne, that I think is supposed to resonate with the Ark of the Covenant that is hidden away in the Holy of Holies. God, in all of God's glory, Yahweh's splendor, is supposed to be within the Ark of the Covenant. That's where God dwells. But when life doesn't go as it is supposed to, neither does God. Here in Ezekiel chapter 1, I freaking love this. Here in Ezekiel chapter 1, we realize that God is not interested in staying put in the temple when God's people are in exile. God is not a God of the empire. God is a God of the exiled. And I wonder, when we listed all of those words that we've just experienced in our lives. For Ez, he is feeling that because he is in exile. And I wonder if that motif of exile is actually quite familiar for you. You know what it feels like to be in exile. To be in exile from family, to be in exile from friends, to be in exile from God, to be in exile from yourself, to be in exile from the land. And you know what it feels like to sit and cry, God, as I sit by this river, where are you? Where are you, O Yahweh? God is not found in temples. Dare I say it, God is not even found in churches. God is not confined to the Holy of Holies any more than God is confined to this building. God is in all and through all. In Ezekiel 1, it feels like it's screaming off the page. God is the God, here's some D's for you as I was thinking about this. God is the God of the dispossessed. God is a God of the diaspora. God is a God of the down and out. God is a God of the disenfranchised. God is the God of the deconstructing. At New City Church, when we first started, we spent a lot of time thinking about this notion of exile. We went through the book of Exodus. And I think that was so healthy for the group of people that started meeting back in the day, because so many of us had been in exile and it felt like we needed to create a new space. For those of you who've joined New City in the last year, maybe, we haven't spoken about exile much or wilderness. But as we go into this series in Ezekiel, we're going to discover what it feels like to be in exile. And I hope that you're surprised with joy to discover that in the wilderness, God doesn't disappear. In exile, God doesn't cease existing. In exile, God is deeply present. Now, if Ezekiel thinks things are bad now, we're going to peel back a couple of layers. Do we feel ready to? Or I'll stop here. Any questions at this point? We're feeling okay? Let's peel back just a couple more layers. If Ezekiel thinks that things are bad now, little does he know that things are going to get worse. And this is the trajectory that we're going to follow through the book of Ezekiel. Sets over the course of about a 27-year period. In Ezekiel 33, a refugee is going to appear before Ezekiel, having run from Jerusalem, which has been sieged. The Babylonians have held it in siege for many, many years. The refugee arrives and he says, it's over. The war is finished because Jerusalem has fallen. The temple has been destroyed. That sets up a lot of the plot for the rest of the Old Testament. But the temple has been destroyed. It also sets the stage for the final showdown. And this is where it gets really Revelation-esque. I'm going to read for you from verse 47 of the final chapter. Oh no, sorry, chapter 47 from verse 6. Now, just to remind you, where is Ezekiel at the moment? In Babylon, sitting by a river. Okay, we're in chapter 1. He's sitting by a river in Babylon, wishing that he could get to, I'm going to call it Jerusalem. Jerusalem. Then he led me back to the... This is a vision that continues as we get to the close of the book. Then he led me back to the bank of the river. And when I arrived there, I saw a great number of trees on each side of the river. And this time, context, the river is not flowing out of Babylon or Iraq. The river is flowing out of, if we think Revelation, again, it's all just plagiarized. Where does the river flow out of in Revelation? Hint, it's the name of our church. New city. It flows out of this new city. Ezekiel is caught up in this vision of a new city, and something's taking place. When I arrived there in verse 7, I saw a great number of trees on each side of the river. He said to me, this water flows toward the eastern region and goes down into the Arabah, where it enters the Dead Sea. When it empties into the sea, the salty water there becomes fresh, and swarms of living creatures will live there. Wherever the river flows, there's going to be large numbers of fish because the water flows there and makes the salt water fresh. So where the river flows, everything will live. Fruit trees of all kinds will grow on both banks of the river. Their leaves will not wither, nor will their fruit fail. Every month they will bear fruit, because the water from the sanctuary flows to them. Their fruit will serve for food and their leaves for healing. I hope this is really just ringing Revelation bells here. The leaves of the trees are for the healing of the nations, is in Revelation. In verse 48, 35, and the name of the city that the river is flowing from, it's not Jerusalem, it's Yehovah Shammah, and that translates as the Lord is there. The Lord is there. Ezekiel chapter 1 opens with Ezekiel down in the dumps in exile, not as life is supposed to have gone. And it closes with this image of not just Israel being renewed, not just Babylon being renewed, but the whole region, which I think is supposed to be indicative of the whole cosmos, is renewed. Everything takes this new breath of life. And the rest of Revelation, we're going to track this theme of renewal. If you are here and you are tired, if you are here and you are angry, if you are here and you are in exile, Ezekiel is your book. It's a book that says your heart, which so often feels like stone. If you're here and you feel, oh, there are things in my life that I just want to get rid of, there's things in myself that I want to change, but I don't want to feel guilt and shame about it, Ezekiel says, God's work is all about creating a new heart. For the people of Israel who have gone so far astray, the book of Ezekiel is all about not just creating new streams of life for them, but new streams of life for the whole cosmos. And here's my invitation that I have taken for myself. I'm going to throw it out for you if you want. The prophet Ezekiel is engaging in what we might call the prophetic imagination. He's seeing a better future. Here's what Walter Brueggemann, who's a brilliant Old Testament theologian, says. The prophet engages in futuring fantasy. Futuring fantasy. The prophet does not ask if the vision, these visions of renewal, these visions of peace, these visions of hope, these visions of justice and righteousness and goodness and thriving and shalom, the prophet doesn't ask if these visions can be implemented. Because questions of implementation are of no consequence until the vision can be imagined. The imagination must come before the implementation. Our culture is competent to implement almost anything and to imagine almost nothing. The same royal consciousness that make it possible to implement anything and everything is the one that shrinks imagination. Because imagination is a danger Thus, every totalitarian regime is frightened of the artist. It is the vocation of the prophet to keep alive the ministry of imagination, to keep on conjuring and proposing futures alternative to the single one that the king wants. When life doesn't go the way it's supposed to go, God invites Ezekiel to embark on a reimagining of the future. And it's a future in which God is deeply present. So do you ever sit by the banks of the river and ponder what went wrong? I hope you do. I hope you ponder what went wrong, but I hope you don't stay there. For me, as I think about the book of Ezekiel, I think about the hope that is to come, and I want to be part of that prophetic imagination, to take part in a future fantasy that can dream of a better future. And the future that we're going to see play out in Ezekiel is centered on justice. It's centered on righteousness. It's centered on the people of God flourishing. That sounds good, doesn't it? It sounds really, really good. Can I pray for us? God, we thank you that when life goes astray, when it all goes off the rails, when it feels like you are distant, when we are told that you are distant, God, even if we believe that you are small and far away, that you belong in temples or churches, in places that we are no longer at, even if we believe those things, we thank you that they aren't true. Because God, even in Babylon, in exile, Ezekiel encountered you. God, for years, many of us have been in exile, have been wandering, maybe in the wilderness. God, we thank you that you are in exile. We thank you that you are in the wilderness. God, would you give us glimpses of you? Would we see a glimmer of a corner of your robe out of the corner of our eye, that we might be filled with hope? And God, give us as a church, collectively, an imagination for a better future. God, we want to paint a tomorrow that is different from today, one that is terrifying to totalitarian regimes, one that is based in justice. God, would you give us the imagination to be grand, and then the wisdom to play it out. God, we thank you for Ezekiel. We hand over this series to you, and we ask that you would bless us as we dive into these words. Amen. I hope that this series is encouraging for you. As I said, I want to give a warning, it's messy, but I will forewarn if we're going to come into weeks that are complicated. Next week, we look at Ezekiel's message to Israel, and it's all about repentance. In other words, you're doing it wrong. Let's get a better idea of where we can be headed. And that is, I'm excited to jump into that with you next week.